Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
Well, we're especially delighted to welcome our next Author of the Week back to the Midweek Drive, of course, because we can congratulate him on the basis of being the 2023 winner of the ABR Award for Best Thriller in the Techno Character. I say him, of course, it's a double act, inevitably. We have one of the two geniuses behind the whole Enigma series. That's Charles Brakefield. How are you, Charles?
God, I always like your introductions. They always make me want to know more about myself. So I thank you.
It's important, of course. And as we say, obviously, you work clearly with the awesome Rocks Burkey. How is she these days?
She's fine. She expresses her sentiment about not being able to join. In Texas, we have a phrase that when you're unable to make something, make an appointment, you simply say you're hip deep in alligators, and everybody knows that to press on.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting one in terms of the actual phrase, because I would have thought that rather than actually a Texas phrase, that might have been a kind of Floridian phrase, or maybe even North Carolina phrase, hip deep in alligators. But what the hey, Jessica Virtus, welcome back to the Author of the Week feature. How are you?
Hello, I'm doing pretty good. No alligators in sight.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a Texas thing, Charles. Clearly.
Just to be accurate, I have seen alligators in the state parks in southeast Texas. There actually are alligators. They have a big sign that says "Don't feed the alligators," and I'm like, oh yeah, wouldn't dream of it. Okay.
Especially if you're hip deep in them, but never mind. Let's progress. Were you pleased? I mean, I goes without saying, doubtless you're pleased to actually picked up the ABR award, and clearly richly deserved from that perspective. How did you feel when you got the result?
Quite pleased. I didn't have to call Roxanne. She could hear me down the street when I went yippee. So it was very gratifying. We've had a couple of really good wins in previous books. The audio book is a different media, as you'd understand, from the written word. And we spent a it's not just throw it over the fence and say, here, record this. There's a lot of work that goes into helping to prep, stage, and guide the voice actor, so that there's no flaws in the kind of voice accents that we're imagining. He's quite good. If he says, if I don't give him the full inventory, okay, here are the people, we've already done this voice before, and here's where you can indulge yourself. So those are the times when he has the probably the most fun, when he's doing something like that, because we, you know, it's like, what do you think? And it's important for the voice actor to have that kind of latitude. If you're too heavy-handed with them, then they don't get to put their creativity to it, and that's a big part of what we got with Derek Scholes, and the in that particular recording. So we don't go with anybody else. If he says I'm jammed up, it'll be this many weeks before I can get to you. We wait that many weeks. We don't look for somebody else.
But at the end of the day, is in the immortal words, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. If you weren't actually producing the words to be said, then Derek, like many other actors, would simply be actually twiddling their thumbs. I'm just saying. Let's move on to, again, the Enigma series, which continues to grow from strength to strength. And indeed, I love the line on EnigmaBookSeries.com, technology, today's weapon of choice. We have the Enigma Factor, Enigma Rising, Enigma Ignite. I'm just gradually working my way through this process. But Jessica, any questions you'd like to put to Charles? As this is the first time, I think, in the several attempts that we've managed to get you both together from that side of things. We've had Kathy Manso joining us beforehand. But it's over to you, Jessica, to give the North Carolina perspective. And also, Charles, Jessica recently received news that she's got her MA in children's literature as well from the fabulous world of Trinity College Dublin.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm actually really curious about where you get your inspiration from. Is it just from everyday life, or is it something that you've seen in media before?
Well, the first 12 books in the Enigma series, those were all cyber threats, and it's the it kind of concentrates on the good guys, who are second generation, and the transition to the third generation throughout by the 12th book. In the Enigma Tracer, this is where we transition to yet another generation. And so this is the first book in the Enigma Heirs series. And we wanted to try and do something a little bit different. The same theme, I mean, what's under attack? How do we beat the bad guys? But this is now the first battle for the young ones to in this the fourth generation to take over. And it's like in regular life, you know, you would say, did I give all of the nurturing? Did I do all the mentoring for the children? Did I get everything that I had in mind taught to them so they can be successful? And it's always that anxiety from the previous generation wondering if they've ever done everything they need to do for the next generation to be successful and prosper. So a lot of it's life looking. A lot of it is just because we're technologists by trade. Stuff shows up and it's like, whoa, wouldn't this be nasty if we could turn this into an attack vector against the good folks on this planet? And then we're off.
The intergenerational aspect of that is super interesting. How did you go about deciding? Did you plan it all out in advance, or was it more of it just kept going? You knew you had more story to keep telling.
Sometimes the stories, just kind of, jump on you and then they won't turn loose of you. I'm in book number two of the Enigma Heirs series, which is called Enigma Forced, and it's another desperate competition between the good guys and the bad guys. And the bad guys are always ahead, and that's that always sounds a bit trite, but it's true. It's always the good guys are trying to get caught up. Those are the things that that we see, and those are the things we like to try to write to. So sometimes they just show up on your doorstep, and it's like, okay, I need to capture this. And sometimes it's research, or you'll because I'm always scanning the horizon. What else is out there? Is it artificial intelligence? Is it cyber threats from deep fakes? Is it where do these things fit into the tools of the trade for the bad guys to exploit?
One of the clear elements that comes across is that notion of the techno thriller. And we've spoken in the past, Charles, about how, as you mentioned just now, actually, we're catching up, we're playing catch up in so many ways. Artificial intelligence and ChatGPT, even since we last spoke in September, has continued to grow and expand in all sorts of ways. Is this something that, we are seeing potentially, in the words of Elon Musk, an extinction level event? And in essence, do you have any thoughts about the great owner of X and his views and takes on technology?
He's always an interesting character. We always refer to him as the Mighty Musk because he's always got some grandiose plan going on. I have a sneaking admiration for him. I'm not a big fan of his, but boy. Does he ever churn out headlines and topics of things that are of interesting to ponder? And yeah, I think that there is in book number 11 in the Enigma series, in the Enigma Beyond, the subtitle was "Who Won the AI Wars?" And that's very much where we're headed to at this point in time. We've got some people that are teaching the what I like to call the information vampires as fast as possible to be able to learn and function in our world on our terms. And that's probably ill-advised in my way, from my way of thinking. Are there good things you can do with it? Yeah, and they all seem to have that same seductive texture to them that makes me think that it looks too easy. I can just lounge around in my my jammies and and have a good time and let the all the work being done. It's like, but that's not who I am. I like to work. That's the thing that I would hate to have that robbed from me. I'll put you like that.
There's a substantive body of work that you've produced already together with Roxy. Is there a stepping in point, or just a case of go where you are guided? If you want to start with Enigma Gamers, start with Enigma Gamers. If you want to start with Enigma Stolen, start with Enigma Stolen. Or would you say, no, begin with the beginning, go with the Enigma Factor?
I would say, now, to be fair, these are all written to be standalone. If you grab one and pull it out of the series, like, this looks kind of interesting. It's got a great topic. It's about, DNA re-engineering to live forever. Okay, I want to read about that. You can enjoy that book by itself without all the others. Are they richer if you start with the Enigma Factor and go forward? Absolutely. That's, but characters grow. They age. They mature. They learn lessons. They stub their toes. But we try to make sure that as the character universe progresses forward, you're not bored to death by repetition. Okay, here's all the stuff that you didn't read in the first book. And if you've read the first books, like, or the one before it, that's really tedious. And it's not fair. So we don't play that game. We do give you enough to be able to say, I'd like to know more. And that's kind of the ambition, to get you to say, I'd like to read more.
Now, I know from previous chats that we've had, Charles, you're a big fan of winemaking and cooking extravaganzas. Well, I've been waiting at least three interviews with your good self. We're into the fourth now, of course, for Jessica to be able to finally put these questions to you, because it is part of her campaign from Charlotte, North Carolina, to spread the word about some nutritional key facts when it comes to authors, etc. You may be familiar with this, you may not, but Jessica, the questions are yours.
Yes, and you're from which state again? Was it Florida? Or
Texas.
Texas.
Okay,
yeah.
You've probably heard of this. I love to ask if anyone has tried or had or liked sweet tea, or, for extra points, boiled peanuts.
Boiled peanuts, no. Sweet tea, my mom used to make it, and it was so sweet. And my mother-in-law, she made it even sweeter than my mom did, so much so that you could float a spoon in it. And it was concentrated. And so what you did was you had, three quarters of a glass of water, and you just blip some of the sweet tea into it. And it's like, whoosh. I mean, your back teeth are wiggling. I mean, you're ready to run a marathon. I mean, you couple of glasses like that, and you're ready to run down to the beach from Oklahoma and go swimming. So, her sweet tea was classic.
I have to say, the sweeter the tea, I'm a bigger fan of it. I think it can't have too much sugar. But are there any foods from Texas that are very regional that you're a big fan of?
We've had taken a lot of pride in taking Mexican food and morphing it into Tex-Mex food, and it's for some people it's shameful, to have corrupted both Texas and Mexican food, and for some people it's like, they're in that long line ready to be able to scoop up the Tex-Mex food, because it's got that regional flavor to it, and it is not like food in Mexico, because I've been in Mexico, like, like, I'll order some of the my favorite stuff, and what is this? It's nowhere close to being the same. So I would say there was a very regional flair for cuisine here in Texas, all the way from the very the five-star restaurants and the Michelin designations, all the way down to the street vendor selling stuff. And yes, I've feasted on all of them so that you can have a full sampling. Vending food in the airports, not so much. I'll pass on that and let you educate me on over the phone.
Maybe we should have some kind of AI that will maybe one day help develop some new recipes that we've never possibly thought of, and we'll have some new kinds.
Yeah.
COP 28 has pretty much just come to its end, the Conference of Parties, Charles. Do you feel that, in essence, climate change with respect to artificial intelligence, with respect to all these challenges that are there, will be serving as more fuel for your wonderful narrative stories? Or is it a case of, when it comes to COP 28, it's a cop out?
I would expect some of that. It's you can be tedious to the point, or write about something to the point where it's just tedious. Oh, them again? Gee, can't we have something fresh? And so that's always the our ambition. And in the Enigma Tracer, that this is about them fighting with the good guys up against the an ecological gangster. He's sidestepped everything. He's smarter, faster, more cruel than they imagined, but they're still up against him. So there's room for a lot of evil going on to be able to intercept, and not just hammering on AI.
So as we approach 2024, and you look back on the award-winning year of 2023 for your good selves, at least, are the ambitions as high as ever, or is it a case of are you looking to have total domination of the media world, and are you secretly hoping that Disney will be listening to this and say, we need to sign up those Enigma files now?
Boy, I'd like to talk to Disney, and say, dude, where have you been? We have some great material for you, and we'd be happy to be on that landscape, as you described. I don't know that dominating it was what we had in mind, but to be a participant, yeah, count on us. Yeah, we'd love to be able to play in that particular circus, because it's intriguing. I mean, case in point, we got invited to attend the Austin Film Festival second round classification for our Out of Poland screenplay. I was very, very pleased to be able to do that. I was down there and got to hang out with a whole bunch of swell folks that knew a whole lot more than I did about screenplay and producing movies. And so it was a great education for somebody who wants to be able to play in that particular marketplace.
We were talking recently about another book of the month that we looked at, which was Elizabeth Kostova's The Historian, which was reworking the vampire tropes of Bram Stoker, of Vlad the Impaler, Vlad Tepes, and so on. Are there any historical characters that you would ever consider reworking into your Enigma series? Or is it a case of Enigma is all about the now and the future as opposed to the past?
We've done some historical, Out of Poland is historical fiction. And a lot of history went into it. Historical characters, it's not really come up on our radar screen. I won't discount it. It's just something that we haven't worked on. There's several characters that come to mind that I probably would like to work through. I think you'd be pleased to know that I'd like to see a little bit more on Winston Churchill and some of the things that he's been purported to say, and things that he's done that and I've read quite a bit of his material from World War II, since that's one of the things I really like. Mm-hmm. But some of the characters, sometimes that seems a bit cheesy. Mm-hmm. to rework somebody else's idea, and I'd be it would hurt my feeling to have somebody point out, well, can't you come up with something original, Charles? So I think that's kind of what I have lurking in the back of my mind, like, okay, You know, this is something that we invented. Now we've shepherded through and built upon over multiple books, and the characterization and the story threads. Those are the things that we'd like to contribute to the literary landscape.
We were, of course, connected back in September. Since then, once again, there are more wars breaking out in the world. We still seem to be heading to challenging times, etc. Ukraine has become less popular, it would seem, in terms of obviously the new space it's generating, and obviously the focus is on Gaza and so on. From your own perspective, is the human race in a half full situation, or is it half empty, or is it we just don't know? We're in interesting uncharted waters.
It looked like it's interesting, uncharted waters. I mean, the economic wars, you did mention that, which is, the Asian strengths that they've shown for manufacturing things that we had an appetite for, and now all of a sudden it's like, really, guys, I wish you wouldn't be doing that. As a matter of fact, we're going to make sure you don't hand over technology that will put us at a disadvantage. So it's not just arms, kinetic energy, being shot at each other. It's also economic warfare. I don't think we've ever seen quite that this level of friction between people and the dogmatic attitude of we're completely right and you're completely wrong. The divisive attitude, in a lot of cultures, like that leaves almost no room for compromise. How do you move forward? And if that's off the table, then that's new information and new observations for me, anyway, from my perspective.
Sure. Jessica, back to yourself for some optimism.
Well, I'm actually really curious about how you think technology has maybe changed storytelling over time and how you're approaching storytelling age that we have things like audiobooks and ebooks, and it's so different from 20 years ago.
Agreed. 20 years ago, an audiobook was extremely expensive, and nobody could afford it. And so, some of the technology, and this is the thing that that I've witnessed over my technical career, is that desperately expensive technology. I mean, at one point, at the end of World War II, they took a survey just to prove a point. They said, "Who in the world is going to want a computer? They're huge. You take up all, acres of space. You need an army of people to take care of it." And IBM did a study for it and came back and said, "We think there'd be a worldwide market of five." The cost has come down for the technology, so that you and I are sitting here on computers that cost less than $1,000. And you add up a whole bunch of extra goodies along, and here we are throwing video back and forth across the country. You couldn't do this. I actually had put in some stuff in the late 80s, early 90s, in an office, and we had to wheel in the video equipment up on the freight elevator. And I actually bolted it together so they could talk from point to point between two places on in North America. You couldn't afford it. Now look at what you can afford. Look at the technology, and so the proliferation, the ability to be able to have stuff that only the elite, the rich elite, could afford, and now is easily within everybody's grasp. But I've seen people go to the library and say, "I want to do a video call." Fine, and they have no equipment. So the technology's there to be able to enable, and that's the great news about that. The bad news is that the bad guys are out there saying, "Hey, that's swell. Now I can use it for blackmailing. So I'll do it from the library." Those are real awkward scenarios. I hope we don't see too many more of those.
Maybe it could be a plot for another book, the intrigue, a side story, maybe.
Well, you know, and it's a you know, part of the mystery and the thriller is trying to get away with it, and that's always the problem. You can commit the crime. Are you going to get away with it? Boy, I keep seeing all kinds of evidence where, you know, somebody got away with they stole somebody else's stolen goods back in 2012. The Dread Pirate Roberts was his handle, and he ran the Silk Road money laundering outfit to be able to help broker drugs, prostitution, human trafficking. Made a quite a good living at it until they shut him down and threw him in jail for life. But they couldn't find all of his money. Somebody had stolen a lot of the bitcoins that he had, and after 10 years, they resurfaced, and they caught the guy. Because they're, you know, the way they are, I won't go into all the architectural nonsense to go along with it, but they actually caught the guy that stole them from the Dread Pirate Roberts. It's an evolving cat and mouse game, and you know, the good guys are getting better at it, but the bad guys are always one step ahead.
Makes for a very interesting story. I do have to
Yes.
admit, whenever I hear Bitcoin, I think of the Mario, the little Mario gold coins,
Yeah.
and I don't think I will ever not just imagine the little Mario gold coins when I hear Bitcoin. So the idea of stealing Bitcoin sounds like a big robbery of a bunch of gold coins to me, which also sounds like an interesting story.
One of the things over in Britain which is causing a lot of concern currently, Charles, is the digital divide. And companies such as Vodafone are endeavoring to actually bridge that by providing needs for people who, effectively, if one doesn't have access to online services, you effectively are a non-person. It's really difficult. It can be very challenging. I mean, just in terms of the basic fundamentals that we actually do, quite apart from the peripherals and doing things like we're doing now. It is a challenge. Do you ever get concerned that, you know, in essence, we are creating a greater divide in society? I mean, you talked about divisive scenarios. What about a technological divide?
Well, yeah, and a lot of times what I'll do is I'll just new technology that comes along. It's like I think I'll play with this just to see what it's like, so that when somebody springs it on me, say, "Oh, I just love this," whatever, yada yada yada, and I want to be able to say, "Yeah, but I just thought about this." It's also where I get some of the ideas about, well, here's where I can break it. Those are the things that I like to do. It's the engineer in me. The thing they always complain about me is like, Charles, if it's not broken, don't take it apart and fix it. Because that's where the mantras of an engineer.
Think one of the aspects that's causing concern over in Britain at present is the stated intention of one of the major telecommunications companies, BT, to abandon all landlines by 2025 and to effectively take the copper wire out so that you're reliant completely on signal to actually get your phone. Now, there are many places in Britain where you can go where the signal is not necessarily great. And clearly, landlines technically still have a part. Do you feel as though it's inevitable landlines will be obsolete within months?
It's curious you would say that. And the last company I was with, one of the things that they said they preached was Frontier Communications. They're tier three carrier. They handle a lot of the rural areas where exactly what your point. There's no macro tower out there. There's no 4G or even 5G out there, and you have to run the copper wire to be able to get there. And then we kept stumbling over this because I was, as a voice architect, like, Charles, what do we do about this? A lot of government installations, their technologies were built on stuff from the 90s. You can't necessarily put it on a digitized platform and have it run the same way. Case in point, emergency 911 in the in campus. Parking lots, elevator phones is another thing that you can't replace that easily. And there was all kinds of stuff that we run into, and it's like, oh, and but just like BT, oh, let's get rid of the landlines and pull out copper. That simply is not mapped to reality. That was a somebody who was had been promoted and was not qualified to be able to talk without a note from his mommy. So that's my position on that, in case anybody wants to know.
Quite apart from the fact that it means that Glen Campbell's classic Wichita Lineman would become incomprehensible to up forthcoming generations.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And, there's a, and if you look at some of the the catchphrases that we grew up with, that have no bearing whatsoever for the for the younger generation. I can't think of anything off the top of my head,
I think it's
but
just a case of I'll give you a bell, or call. It's all sorts of things could be hanging on the telephone, pointless, for that sort of point of view. And other.
Running back, running back to, the phone's ringing. I got to go get it. What do you mean? It's on the wall. You can't just go get it. I mean, and a true statement. I lived in Austin, Texas, in the 1970s, and we lived on a party line. That we had five other families who answered on that same number, and so what you had you did was the phone would ring, and everybody might pick it up, and you say, "Who's calling? Who are you looking for?" Because, and it was on for somebody else. Okay, then the polite thing was to hang up, and if you wanted to make a call, you had to check and see was there anybody talking on it. You can't explain that to somebody, or here's a princess telephone. What's that, Dad? That's what, or how do you make this thing work? Where's the digital pad? Well, no, it's a rotary. A what? So, those are the kinds of things that they don't have that it no longer relevant for because you don't have a cell phone, really? You can't take a picture and transmit it, really? This is unbelievable. I mean, you're making this stuff up, Dad. I those are the kinds of discussions that have very spirited outcomes when we're at the holidays, and I've had too much of my fermented grape. So
Jessica, closing questions for yourself, please. Any thoughts you'd like to raise at present?
well, I know that you're into woodworking, is it?
Early on in my youth, what I wanted to make sure that I knew a trade. I'm sorry, go ahead. You
Sorry,
broke up.
the technology is kind of stopped working. I was going to ask what kinds of things you liked most to make with the woodworking.
What I've done is just about everything. I'm a fanatic about walking the dog and looking for broken furniture that's been thrown out that can be repurposed. And it's I think the French have actually got some laws on the book that says if you can repair it, you can't throw it out. And so I kind of like that approach. Like, can you make it work? Can you fix it? And I've seen a lot of people just, that skill set no longer exists, particularly in this neck of the woods here in Dallas, for people that, well, it's broken. I could re-glue it. I don't know, have the tools or the expertise to be able to do that. So out it goes, and they'll buy something new. And so that consumerism is a bit disappointing. That kind of an attitude of because I've seen some tremendously nice pieces of furniture thrown out. Four-poster bed that I went and put back together and then revarnished it, and I got it upstairs in my in the house for when the kids visit. So, yeah, that's what I like to do with the the wood, or make frames, for rather than go pay for a framing shop, I'll do the frame myself.
That's wonderful. You're giving them a new life.
We actually have some labels that I put together that says made in China, fixed in Texas, and I put them on the bottom of the chairs and tables. So those are the things that it's my little attempt at humor to be able to repurpose that stuff for other people.
Charles, as ever, it's been an absolute delight. We point out, of course, you can go to enigmabookseries.com to find out everything, including Out of Poland, Hot Chocolate, Nowhere But Up, and of course the entire Enigma series. There's even a QR code there which can actually lead you into the killer Enigma. If you trust the QR code, of course. I mean, who knows what could happen when you start downloading those kind of things to the whole sequence.
So
However, we have the final two questions that we have reached. Jessica, would you like to ask the first of the last two questions, please?
Yes, I would love to. Have you had a reasonably interesting time with us? Or no, wait, a reasonably interesting Zoomer.
I have. You guys are always friendly, personable, and it's fun talking to you. That's I'm not trying to shine you on. It's like it's as soon as the I get a note that says the Siren people are going to try and tolerate you one more time. I'm like, sign me up. I can't wait to go harass them. They're so much fun.
The Siren people sounds a bit like a cult, actually, but we're not like Wacko in any way, shape, or form. Honestly, we all have our own individual ways of working, which is all good.
Well, just like what my father-in-law used to say, if you're half a bubble off, that's okay. So, that's if you know how to use a level in brick lane, half a bubble off was the way he always referred to me anyway. So, I always took it as a compliment.
Functioning within acceptable parameters, to quote another sort of phrase
Correct, yeah.
within that. So I take it, Charles, you'd be kind enough to return in 2024?
Absolutely. But I have something special for you, Alex, and Jessica, for and your guests, to help celebrate the award we got from the for the audiobook for Enigma Tracer. We would like to give to the first five people a download code for free.
Wow. Excellent
So
stuff.
yeah, so if they'll send an email to authors at enigmaseries.com and say, I'd like either a UK code or a US code, because I've got both, and we'll ship them the code. And our request is, please give us a review.
Fantastic. And hopefully they won't be too terrified by the kind of technological disasters that could actually go by just sort of tapping into that code. It's too much, really. Charles, take care. Best to Roxanne as ever. Hopefully we'll see you in 2024. And obviously we'll look forward to seeing you. Have a good holiday season and keep on keeping on.
You too. Much appreciated. Thanks for a great time.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire, I can hear you through the whine. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line. I know I need a small vacation, but it don't look like rain. And if it snows, that stretch down south won't ever stand the strain. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line.
The Art of the Humble Nap, or possibly the siesta if you happen to be from Latin climes. But it does seem as though it's something we maybe don't engage in as much as we could do in terms of what is the optimal nap time. Too long, and it could actually mean that you do far more harm than actually good. But apparently it's 20 minutes. 1,200 seconds is indeed the ideal nap time. How has this come about? Well, we're delighted to welcome sleep expert to talk to us about this particular phenomenon. And we welcome formally Dr. Narina Ramlakhan to the program. How are you, Dr. Ramlakhan?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex, because unlike you, I have had a nap, but you're not too late. It's not too late for you, so don't worry.
Well, that's okay, because I mean, just having driven 126 miles, it wouldn't have been useful to actually nap whilst driving. That's not
absolutely
a good, sensible thing. So
never, ever do that.
Precisely. So what is this whole notion of napping? I mean, is it just a case of, I mean, we've heard a great deal of the power nap and how that can be quite important. But is it more than that? Is it a case of getting in touch with one's inner unconscious self?
Ooh, I like that. How much time have we got? Well, look, let's start at the beginning. Naps are good for you. That's definitely a good thing. And you've mentioned the power nap, so I really want to home in on the power nap, because our research at Lingo has shown that, you know, more than 50% of people are actually taking a nap on Christmas Day. They tend to take a nap. But the problem is, and again, our research shows this, that the average nap tends to be around 53 and a half minutes, which is far too long. If you nap for over 20 minutes, it's going to take you into a different type of energy, if you like, because going over 20 minutes, you start to go into those deeper stages of sleep and you will emerge with a kind of hangover, energy hangover. We call this sleep inertia. Not only is that unhelpful, but it can eat into your nighttime sleep. So the key with napping is, number one, it's good. Number two, do it properly. Most of us could benefit from the power nap, as you've mentioned, Alex. And that's napping. It's a state of relaxation. It's not sleeping as such. It's a state of relaxation, or as you said, going into those deeper states of consciousness. I love the way you put that. So it's almost like a meditation, something like 10 to 20 minutes at some point between 2 and 4 p.m. So 10 to 20 minutes at some point between 2 and 4 p.m. So you might not be too late for your nap, Alex, but it sounds like you might be doing your shift. So maybe not.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, does this obviously relate to the fact that a nap is for life, not just for Christmas, that actually we can actually benefit literally, and maybe even our general work could benefit if we actually adopted this during the course of the normal year?
Absolutely, absolutely spot on. And, you know, I do a lot of work with in corporate environments where there are some organizations where it is culturally acceptable for people to take naps. You know, places like Japan and Hong Kong, where it wouldn't be unusual to see an employee in the afternoon, a group of employees putting their heads down on a mat on top of the desk and just bending forward and resting for 20 minutes or so. There are some organizations that have nap rooms or even nap pods. At one point, there was a whole business in nap pods, sleep pods. But the thing is, I think we have a long way to go with making this an acceptable practice. But if only organizations could wake up to the fact that, you know, if people napped strategically and cleverly and napped more, there would be lower incidences of stress and burnout and exhaustion, and people would be smarter. Because the research shows that even a 6 to 10 minute nap can increase cognitive performance. You become better at solving mathematical tasks, word recall, you think more clearly, you're more focused. And so it's a good thing to do. It's not something for the lazy, and it's not just something you do on Christmas Day.
Abbott's Lingo, as you mentioned, is a biosensor and app combo that's come up with this particular area. And I'm often thinking about it, one of the things about Christmas, surely, is particularly about Christmas with family, that you often tend to find that people will doze off in front of the television, or they'll begin to wander from that point of view. Would you say that you actually need to almost schedule in a nap and coordinate it from that point of view, and actually put it into our systems that, right, OK, I've got 1,200 seconds, 20 minutes, let's do it now?
I mean, that's a lovely idea to do it that way and to really prioritize it, and make it imperative on Christmas Day, maybe a group nap, a family nap, because you don't have to be in a completely silent room. You could do this sitting in a noisy environment, even on a train, but obviously, as you said before, not while you're driving. But you could do it in a noisy environment, just closing your eyes. Sitting upright is actually pretty good, so you don't go in too deep and you don't overnap. A well-ventilated room is good as well. But you mentioned Abbott's Lingo, and I'm 6 weeks into my journey using the biosensor and the app. And what I've learned is that the particular types of foods and the way that I eat that can make my glucose levels spike more, and then I get a crash, and then I would be more likely to overnap or feel exhausted and grumpy. So, but taking the information from the app, from Lingo, what I've learned is that if I sequence my food, and this is all available to the public as well, this sort of information is look at how you eat on Christmas Day. And I don't want to be a killjoy, but actually, if you want to eat strategically so you're not too exhausted and you can nap well, go for your greens first, have your Brussels sprouts, then go for the protein, the turkey and the pigs in blankets or whatever. And then you go for the carb-rich food, your Yorkshire pudding and the potatoes. If you have that, the latter, if you have that right at the beginning, you'll have a massive spike. Then the body produces insulin to normalize blood glucose, and then you get that makes you crash and get exhausted. So start with the right foods and then work your way up to the really yummy stuff like the roast potatoes and the Christmas pudding. But yeah, there's a good science behind all of this, but it makes sense because we could give ourselves more energy, better mood, and even sleep better as a result.
We've certainly spent an awful lot of time over the last few years on the Midweek Drive discussing the importance of sleep and so on. But I was intrigued by the notion of that 2 to 4 p.m. time slot, tying in, of course, with circadian rhythms, the notion of
Yes.
around the day. What about people who are on shift work, though? I can almost hear them say now, it's all very well if you're actually sort of working a normal day, but what about those of us who work at night?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So, thank you for reminding me, because people who do work shifts, and you know, I'm not being ageist about this, or rather, I'm being physiologically ageist. You know, the research, the bulk of research shows that past the age of 30, 35, shift working can really take its toll on your health, and a lot of that is to do with the disruption in circadian rhythms and sleep deprivation. So, for people who work shifts, what you might want to do is to move up a grade in the napping, and you might look at something like a replacement nap, which is a little bit longer. And you're looking at 45 to 50 minutes, so napping a bit longer. Now, if you're missing out on hours and hours of sleep, and I've done a lot of work with the emergency services, you know, fire services and police, where they're working night shifts and things like that, then you move into the realm of something called prophylactic napping, which is you come off your night shift, you get into bed, and you sleep for as long as you can. You know, you haven't got an eye on the clock. And you get as much rest as you can before you go back onto your next shift. But you know, napping is a science in itself. But as human beings and innately as hunter-gatherers, we are built to nap. And you know, the science behind all of this, a lot of it comes from chronobiology units, such as the ones in Boston, you know, NASA, and these units that are informing the airlines, pilots, people who are in strategic operations where they have to concentrate for long periods of time. The research shows time and again, napping is good for you and it can actually minimize the risk of accidents.
It's also probably worth noting that one should never actually say that you can pay off your sleep debt because we do need to have our naps on a fairly regular basis, otherwise sleep habits can go all over the place.
Absolutely. And I would encourage everyone, you know, and your listeners to use this festive period as an opportunity to get into really good sleep habits so that we can all start 2024 in the right frame of mind, body, and spirit. You know, amazing energy for 2024. And I think we deserve it. You know, there's a reason why nature has designed us to spend a third of our lives sleeping. There's an intelligence in that design. And when we sleep well, it restores us physically, mentally, emotionally, I believe spiritually as well. So, you know, I think that would be a really good intention to go into the new year with.
And there was, I think it was just astral traveling that was actually on the agenda, but never mind, it's a different line entirely. What appeals to your good self about sleep research and arena? Just very briefly, why did you decide that this was the area you wished to really focus on?
Oh, I love that question because I was an insomniac. From a baby until my early 30s, I couldn't sleep. A lot of this was related to childhood trauma. I was diagnosed with complex PTSD, bipolar disorder, both labels, which I don't, you know, discredit them. But, you know, I've learned how to manage myself and manage my energy and manage my sleep. And I sleep really beautifully most nights now. Last night, I slept really well, even though I knew I had to be up earlier today. So I have a passion which comes not just from my professional experience, but also very personal experience as well.
Well, then, where can people find out further details about Abbott's Lingo and indeed your own work within the sleep world?
Thank you for asking. Well, head to hellolingo.com. There's so much information there, everything I've covered and more. And I'm drnerina.com, N-E-R-I-N-A. Dr. Nerina, I've written books. The first one is Tired But Wired. That's a really popular one. But even if you just Google me, there's loads there, lots of free stuff as well. But maybe put the Lingo in your Christmas stocking, and that will set you on the right path for 2024.
Clearly. And clearly, we must feature your good self in 2024. We'll get that resolution sorted out already, if you'd be kind enough to return, because there's so many fascinating areas we can pursue with this.
I'd love to.
Dr. Nerina Ramlakhan, huge thanks. Have a fantastic festive and holiday season, and obviously have some great naps.
Oh, you too, Alex. Thank you.
When I wake up early in the morning, lift my head, I'm still yawning when I'm in the middle of a dream. Stay in bed, float upstream. Can't help thinking about you, girl.